JTech Studios in Atlanta, Georgia. It's America's favorite game show podcast. Tell them what they've won. And now, here are your hosts, Tom Bastek and Mike Jacobs.
And welcome in. It's America's favorite game show podcast. Tell them what they've won. We are your hosts, the game show guys. I'm Tom Bastek.
And I'm Mike Jacobs. Tom, we are creeping up on our really big show.
It's a really big shoe.
Shoe. Yeah, we're gonna take it big next week. Close out the season with a really big show.
Yeah, but first we have episode 19 ahead of us today.
We do.
Our featured show this week is Win, Lose, or Draw.
Win, Lose, or Draw, and in my opinion, lose.
Well, I'm going to wait to give mine, but I'm not saying you're wrong, is all I'm saying. We do have a little bit of housekeeping to hit, and then we'll get into the news with Mr. Christian Carrion.
Indeed. I wanted to bring this up at the top of the show to show how out of touch we are. Jonathan S. wrote into us to let us know that, indeed, as we perhaps hinted at, Nielsen boxes are no longer a thing. Nobody uses them anymore, it seems. So there you go. Nowadays, Hulu, YouTube TV, those sorts of features have built-in tracking. And you had mentioned that, you know, they can check all this stuff from their end, which is absolutely true. So, yeah, Nielsen boxes are no longer a thing, though I still stand by my argument that when they were a thing, they were probably not that reliable, or at least not indicative of true trends, I don't think. But what do I know?
I would agree with you 110%. Want to say a quick thanks to everybody for writing in and for listening. We've had more record listens. We'd like to welcome Puerto Rico and Israel to the mix.
Oh, wow. All right. I actually know some people in Israel, so it might be friends of mine.
I'm hoping it's my cousins in Puerto Rico. If it's not, why aren't you listening? And what took you 18 weeks till now?
Well, if it's not them and then they start listening, I bet we could probably double our listenership in Puerto Rico.
Hey, that would be great. I would be very happy with that.
Well, in the, spirit of reaching out across the world, we are hireable for events across the world. We've mentioned this a couple times in the past, and we're going to keep plugging it for a while, but head to tellthemwhatthey'vewon.com/hire-us to get an idea of the virtual events that we could provide for you.
Yeah, and just when you read on there, you'll see that we put three or four different examples. That's not all we can do. If you have something specific that you're interested in doing virtually, give us an idea, and we'll help brainstorm it with you and create an event that's exactly what you need for your audience.
Customizable virtual events. Can it get any better than that? Those folks in Puerto Rico, we can even play with you.
Oh, you make it sound like they're terrible folks in Puerto Rico.
I just mean you don't have to be local to Atlanta. Once this COVID stuff dries up, we're going to be doing live shows probably, and those will be in Atlanta only. So I want to make it known that geographical location is of no concern.
I'd like to think that we'll be able to do live shows across the country at some point.
Well, at some point, sure. But I'm you know. Baby steps, Tom. Baby steps.
Speaking of across the country, let's go all the way across the country to Pennsylvania, in fact, and speak with our resident historian and news guru, Mr. Christian.
All the way across the country. It's like three states away, max.
Light up your cigarette, crack open a beer, put the kiddos to bed. From chaos around the world to carnage in your very old front yard, it's time for the news.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Mike. This is the news brought to you by BuzzerBlog.com. We finally have an official first look at Jeopardy! Season 37, which premieres this September. The quiz show sports two major changes this time around. Number one, a brand new set with separated podiums in an effort to enforce social distancing. The podiums, which now look more like individual pods, are separated by at least 6 feet of space, otherwise functioning the same way as they have for years and years. Number two, Ken Jennings, legendary champ and most recently Jeopardy's greatest of all time, is now a regular contributor to the show. Ken is what Jeopardy calls the show's official ambassador. And they say, as a general ambassador for the show, Ken Jennings will be presenting special clues and categories, offering his expertise in new contestant searches, and helping develop Jeopardy projects.
So wow. I got two things. Oh, I guess you had two things. I want to talk about both those things. So let's first start with the Ken Jennings. Is this grooming to be the next host, do you think?
That's what a lot of people are saying, but at the same time, it still doesn't make too much sense to, you know, because he is so connected in the world of professional trivia, him being host would take a lot of people out of the running. And you think about all the people that he's been in contact with since being on the show, that's just a lot of people that all of a sudden know the host of Jeopardy and probably wouldn't be eligible. At the same time, maybe that's something they're willing to risk. You know, time will tell. I don't know that there are many other instances where a contestant has gone from being a contestant to being a contributor and helping find new contestants and developing projects. It's just, that's an insane precedent to set.
Real quick, I'm not clear on what you mean by, trivia people who know him. Are you not allowed to be on the show if you are an acquaintance of the host? Is that a rule?
Most game shows are pretty strict in terms of you can't be in contact or know anyone or be related to anyone who works for the show, who works for an affiliate that broadcasts the show, who works for anyone that sponsors the show. Jeopardy is pretty strict in terms of their contestant eligibility. Again, I'm not 100% clear on that, but most shows are very strict in terms of...
Yeah, and I mean, I know I'm familiar with the concept of, like, employees can't be on the show. Like, one specific example that hit me pretty hard was, I don't know if you are familiar with the TBS reality competition show. I believe it was called King of the Geeks or something like that. That was one that I would have loved to be on, but I was working for TBS at the time, so I was ineligible.
Well, I remember that show, yeah.
But I didn't know that it, like, extended to, like, even being an acquaintance or friend or whatever with them. That's pretty wild.
Well, you know what's funny? Years ago, this was the first year of the current Price is Right. So back in the 70s, there was an episode where a woman made it on stage, and it turned out she was ineligible because she was a common law wife of one of the cameramen. So what they did was they scrapped the episode and they retaped it with the same games, same audience, same prizes. So nobody was surprised by anything on that episode, but they had to scrap it because the woman knew the camera guy.
Wow, that's wild. So my second thing then is, I guess knowing that the podiums are 6 feet apart is a little bit better. But when I saw that picture of the Jeopardy stage, I was a little bit like, I don't get it. What'd they do? It looks the same to me. And, you know, maybe I'm just, like, overly sensitive being in an immunocompromised house. I have to, like, take the social distancing thing very, very seriously. To me, that does not cut the mustard.
Well, you know, we're seeing the set from really far away, so right. I'm hopeful that once we get a nice close-up of what's going on there, we'll feel a little bit better. But yeah, I think it's a good first step.
I think you're right about that. And like I said, I couldn't even tell that they were 6 feet apart. So I think the fact that it's just so far away makes it hard to tell. But I didn't see because we had initially talked about them having the dividers up. I didn't see any of that. I don't know. I mean, again, I'm probably more attuned to this than the common person is. And you know, most people probably don't care as much. But it just struck me that it didn't seem as dramatic as I probably would have chosen it to be.
Well, the good news is we'll go ahead and we'll throw the picture up on the website so that you guys can check it out and let us know what you think about it.
Yeah.
There you go.
Judge for yourself. Don't listen to me. I'm an idiot.
Only when it comes to Hollywood Squares, Match Game, and Gambit. All right, Christian, what else do you have for us?
All right. Well, on the subject of COVID prevention in game shows, we also have some news from the set of Wheel of Fortune. Now, we have talked extensively on this podcast about what they're going to do to protect the contestants from having to touch each other's surfaces and be in close contact with each other. We've talked about them being separated and having to walk up to the wheel to spin it. We've talked about the possibility of them painting the different pegs so that you only grab your color when you spin. Here is what Wheel of Fortune is doing. Giant plastic condoms.
What?
Excuse me?
So this is what it is. Every player has a hollow plastic tube that they hold in their hand. When they go to spin the wheel, they bend down, put it over the peg, and then spin it.
I mean, I guess that works, but the painting idea is much better.
Yeah, so they leave it on the peg then, or they just take it off, like, as they remove their hand, they just take it with it?
That has not been seen yet, but this is all coming from somebody who works on the show. It's a plastic device that they use to just provide a barrier between their hand and the peg, but the good news is that all the contestants get to keep them.
Aww.
Okay.
What yeah, a this weird is like, dystopian Wheel of Fortune
scenario. Dude, this is as bad as the original supermarket sweep when you got to keep your sweatshirt if you didn't win.
The like,
and if you won, you had to give it back, which means that more than likely you were wearing a sweatshirt that somebody else had worn before.
Yeah, not That's pleasant. Gross. Hopefully you're not winning someone else's peg condom.
I bet you will find those on eBay, though, guys. Get ready.
Oh, God.
I can't wait. I can't wait. It wouldn't be the first time I've Googled Wheel of Fortune condom.
I don't even know what that means. I don't think I want to know. Let's move on.
Me neither.
Christian, let's talk about this week in game show history.
Of course. Well, this week in game show history, we're going back to a very special year for me, 1993. I was 4 years old, and this is at the height of Nickelodeon's creative output. And part of their creative output in 1993 was the premiere of Legends of the Hidden Temple. Legends of the Hidden Temple was one of those shows that every 90s kid's nostalgia wet dream is made of. I mean, if you're not familiar with the show, there are four teams of kids, each of them representing a different color. You got the blue barracudas, the green monkeys, the
purple parrots.
Yeah, purple parrots, my favorite. But each team was decked out in a color. They would listen to Olmec, a big Aztec sort of mountain thing, tell a story, answer questions based on that. And as the game progressed, teams were eliminated and they would compete in giant physical challenges. And the goal was to make it to the end of the show and the temple run. And the temple was a big, huge, almost like a house with different rooms and temple guards that would catch you if they ran into you in a certain room. And it was just a beautiful show. Again, one of those shows that captivated the imaginations of kids of that generation, me included. And to this day, they sell Legends of the Hidden Temple merchandise. I think you could buy replicas of the helmets that they used on the show at certain Halloween shops if you
want to go
all the way and be a contestant for Halloween.
And you can find the shirts of the different teams all over the internet. There are a dime a dozen. I mean, not literally. They're probably pretty expensive. But you can find them without trouble.
Absolutely.
This show, like you say, I mean, this show was so awesome, and like as a kid watching it, it was amazing. I loved it, and it's funny because I also remember this and Power Rangers were two shows that in my mind were the first time I realized that maybe I was too old for the target market for the show. But you just said 1993. I was 11. Like, what kind of pompous ass 11-year-old is like, oh, I'm too old for Legends of the Hidden Temple?
I've evolved.
God, my younger self was a jerk.
Yeah, well, you know, we've heard from him far too often, too.
Yeah, that's true.
Christian, I don't know if you know this. On one of our promos a while back, we got actual young Mike to do the promo through a recording that he had.
Did you really? I got to go back and hear that. That's phenomenal.
Yeah, it's the trailer for Double Dare. Yeah, I have an old tape that I used to do this all the time when I was a kid. I would just tape myself and make like quote unquote radio shows. One time I specifically just reenacted a fire sign theater bit. So one of the tapes, the only one that's still surviving, is me and a buddy of mine. It's called Our Cool Radio Tape. And we pretended like we were running a radio station. We had like little skits and gags, and then we'd play songs in between and stuff. And
that's
great.
So cool. That's so cool. My best friend and I, when I was in grade school, we used to mess around with a tape recorder too. And we used to do our own episodes of Whose Line Is It Anyway? And I was always Drew Carey. I was always the guy with the buzzer.
That's awesome.
Nice.
Good times.
Nice.
Wow.
I love
memories.
It. All right. This week, Christian, we are doing Win, Lose, or Draw.
Win, Lose, or Draw was a cool show. Not the first drawing-based game show, and definitely not the last. The only one that was played in Burt Reynolds' living room, of course. And the set was modeled after his living room, because the game itself, Win, Lose, or Draw, in that form, was something that celebrities had played for years before that. And the host, Burt Convy, had the idea of striking up a production partnership with Burt Reynolds to turn this game that they played in his living room into a series.
Burt and Burt.
Burt and Burt Productions. That's it. But as a result, created one of the coolest 80s shows. Burt Convy hosted it. Vicki Lawrence did it a couple years later. I thought she did a good job. You had Teen Win, Lose, or Draw on the Disney Channel.
With Skippy. Skippy from, what's his name? Mark Price.
Yeah,
Family Ties was the host of that.
Right. Yeah, sure was.
Fun fact, Skippy's real name is Irwin Handelman.
That is fun.
Yeah, we got crickets after that. That's fine. Nobody cares about my random Family Ties trivia.
Oh, my God.
Win, Lose, or Draw is just one of those very 80s shows, from the outfits to the music to the set to the celebrities that were on the show. It was just quintessential 80s. And as a result, it's even more fun to watch today, I think, than it was back in the day.
All right. How about a plug for our good friends at the Buzzer Blog?
Of course, buzzerblog.com, the number one game show website in the world. Whether you're looking for casting information, whether you're looking for information on returning shows, on brand new shows, buzzerblog.com is the place to go for industry insiders and game show nerds, casual fans alike. Buzzerblog.com. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Christian. I don't want to say I'm hesitant to get into gameplay because I'm not hesitant. I just didn't like this show as much as I thought I would.
I agree. I have fond memories of it for some reason. I think I liked it at one point.
Yeah.
And I like we'll get into this more. I like the game of it. But it's not a fun thing to watch. Like, it's something to play. I was let down significantly.
Well, I definitely want to hear from folks out there. Once we're done, I'll pitch this towards the very end. But I'd love you to write in and tell us what your thoughts are. You know, that's something we haven't been doing, is gathering the consensus of the audience on what they feel about the different game shows we do. So you can also always add that socially or drop us an email. And let us know what you think of these shows, because just because we say a show is great or it's terrible certainly does not mean that it is. To me, Mike, this is a lot like beer. There is no such thing as a bad beer. There's just beer you don't like.
Well, except for Miller Lite. But sure, no, I take your point.
Except for Match Game. But I take your point.
Now you're getting it.
Yeah. Let's take a break real quick. We come back, we'll get into the gameplay of Win, Lose, or Draw. You've been listening to America's favorite game show podcast. Tell them what they've won. And if you hear that, then you know that's the music from Win, Lose, or Draw. Or maybe you actually didn't know. But I got to tell you, Mike, as we get into this intro here, I'm not crazy about the way it opens up.
Very, very awkward intro. Having the host like have to cut through the people who are fake playing the game for no prizes. Or like, all right, so hang on. Well, let's take a step back, because in Double Dare, we had mentioned this, that it doesn't happen very often where the game starts off in the middle of the action. And this one definitely does. But it doesn't really. Like, it's totally staged. It doesn't have any impact on the game. Like, in Double Dare, it determined who got control of the first round. In this, it's just, they're just pantomiming playing the game. It's really dumb.
Now,
I don't like it.
I want to explain for the folks who haven't seen this, and we'll talk more about this in the history, but a quick description of the set is two couches basically pivoted out facing each other, where there's an easel in the middle where people are drawing on it.
Giant piece of, or pad of paper, yeah.
Right. And Bert literally, when Mike says he cuts in between, he's sitting on one of the edges of the couch.
On the arm,
and then he cuts through between the two couples or the two teams while the person's still drawing, and comes out and says hello. And then after he says hello, he goes back between the two teams to tell the person to go sit down who's drawing.
Uh-huh.
And then they do the introductions of the celebrities. It is the most awkward intro I have ever seen on a game show.
I totally agree. And both versions do it like that. And when they come forward, they don't do anything other than just say, hey, welcome. And then go back. Yeah. It's like, why not just start the show at the... I don't understand it. It's really weird. I guess it's meant to give you a more like in the living room feel, but I don't know. I agree that it's just super awkward.
Right.
But let's maybe dive into the gameplay a little bit. One thing, actually, before we talk into the gameplay, one more thing about the intro. After they do the super awkward thing and they go back and they introduce these celebrities who are going to be on the show, they have these caricatures, which are really well done. A gentleman by the name of Overton Lloyd is the artist there. He does all of them. He's apparently known for doing them very, very quickly. There was an episode that I saw with Richard Simmons where he got so excited about the caricatures and had Overton come out and do a quick sketch of him, and it was really cool. It was a good way to pay homage to someone that is mainly behind the scenes.
And, you know, the great thing is he's a heck of an artist. He's got a great background. He's known for creating all kinds of cover art, probably most famously George Clinton and the Parliament Funkadelics. The album Motor Booty Affair had a big, like, cartoony, drawn, hand-drawn cover to it. He's done that in other records as well, but that's where he's really well known for, is besides the caricatures.
That's awesome. I mean, I would have to imagine he's more well known for that than his caricatures on Win, Lose, or Draw. But
this was a pretty popular show, whether we like it or not.
For a little bit, it was, for sure. So anyways, the game has two different teams. They always do men versus women. And on each team, you got two celebrities and one civilian contestant. And it's basically just Pictionary. A team member goes up to the giant pad of paper and is tasked with drawing a word or phrase or title or, you know, anything really that could be written down, and they cannot speak, they cannot use letters or numbers, they can only draw stuff, and basically within a minute they have to get their teammates to guess whatever the word or phrase or title or what have you would be. If they get it right, it's $200 for a correct answer. At 30 seconds, the drawer could swap with another player on their team, so you'll hear like a little door chime sound, and then they go sit down. They're not allowed to, you know, guess, obviously, because they know what the answer is. But another contestant can come up and maybe take a different approach to the same phrase. But when they do that, it cuts the point values in half, or I guess dollar values in half, so you'd only get $100.
Right. The other thing, in terms of strategy, I was thinking about this. You're better off just having the same person draw the whole time, because not only does it not cut your point values in half, but you have two different brains trying to guess the thing instead of just one brain trying to guess it, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, the flip side of that is that you have two different brains trying to come up with a way to draw it. So maybe one person was trying to draw it a little too literally, and then you could do like a sounds like a thing, or, you know.
Right.
Maybe
right.
Think about it in a different way to get them to get it.
For those of you who have never seen the show, if this sounds anything like any of the games that you've played, board games you've played since then, yes, you're absolutely right. This is essentially charades on paper, but it's in so many different board games. Obviously Pictionary and Win, Lose, or Draw, but what is it? Scattergories? Doesn't that have something?
No, Scattergories is all just category writing stuff.
Cranium.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, there's all sorts of games like it. Now, one thing about the writing down letters and numbers, once someone says a word that is in the answer, they can write that down. And the idea there being is, like, let's say you needed someone to guess a fly, like the insect a fly, right? So you draw it out and they go bee, wasp, hornet, and they, you know, are just naming different insects because they can tell it is a insect. When they say fly, you want to make sure that they know it's fly and they stick with that. So you write down fly and they now know that, you know, they can stick with that word.
Yeah. Half the word is fly.
Correct. Or a word in the phrase is fly.
Right.
So like I say, they have 1 minute to get that. If no correct answer is given within that minute, the other team is given a single chance to throw out a guess and see if they can get it. If they do, they get the 100 point, or I keep saying points, $100 for winning the round. And to be perfectly honest, I feel like the vast majority of times that happens, the other team gets it right. And I think there's two primary reasons for that. One is that they are getting all the wrong answers out of the way from the other team, so they know what not to guess. And B, you have the time to sit there and contemplate it. I think the strategy of just like shouting out as much stuff as you can, word vomit, is a terrible strategy for this game. I don't think it allows you to really analyze what's being drawn and let your brain figure it out and come to a logical conclusion. You're just word vomiting, and it doesn't seem to be very beneficial when people do that. There's one thing to lead the drawer, but
right.
Yeah.
And that's what I was going to say. I think that there's still some guesses that need to happen. But like as you and I have spoken, it's not like, okay, it's a square, it's a box, it's a, oh, it's a house, because you put the triangle on top of the square. And if I had just waited literally and kept my mouth shut for 1 second, you would have put the triangle on top of the square and I would have said house.
Right. But instead you're too busy focused on box and other words for boxes, and you keep focusing on that and not realizing that they've drawn a house around it. And I mean, that's correct. Not literally what happens, but more often than not in the episodes I saw where people are word vomiting, they don't do very well.
Agreed.
So after three rounds of this, they go on to the 90-second speed round, which is where one player goes up. There's no switching at this point, just one player goes up, and they have 90 seconds, and they have to get their teammates to guess as many of these words or phrases or what have yous as possible within that 90 seconds. So each one being worth 100 points, and both teams go, obviously, and then once that is done, the team with the most money, not just in that round, but overall for the course of the game, will be declared the quote-unquote winner and wins an extra $1,000. Of course, all of this prize money going to the civilian contestant, not the celebrities, because they are celebrities. They don't need it. They're probably already being paid to be on the show. And some later adjustments that happen to the show. Normally, I don't want to touch too much on these because I like talking about the core gameplay, but this one I thought was interesting. Sure. Because there seemed to be a very clear reason behind it. They adjusted this final bonus round. Originally, you could pass twice at any point during the round. If you didn't think you could get a word, you could just pass and go on. If you passed more than, or if you've already passed twice, tough luck, stick with it. In these later rounds, they let you do unlimited passes, but the way it worked was every answer you would get was worth $50 each instead of $100, and you would bank your money as you went along, and if you passed it, it resets your bank, which is a very severe penalty, if you ask me.
Wait, it resets your bank to zero?
That's what I understood in the reading of it.
Wow.
Yeah. And so also what they did is that the $200 prize, I guess it is kind of the same thing. So the $200 prize in this later version could only be won if the contestant got the correct answer in the first 30 seconds. The difference here being is that A, you can't swap. So in the initial version, you could have, in theory, not swapped and still gone over 30 seconds and gotten $200. This version, that strategy is not possible. And the other thing is you had to wait 25 seconds to place a guess, which means that really you only had 5 seconds to give an answer. But like I said earlier, to me, that is more reasonable because you have the 25 seconds to sit there and think about it for a second before you can throw something out. And in that 5 seconds, it's far more likely that you're going to get a right answer than just shouting. So anyways, if they didn't get it after the first 30 seconds, it's cut down to 100 no matter what. And also in this version, when the opponents steal, they don't get the full value for the question. They only get $50. What this all says to me is that the show was failing and they needed to save money. It cut down the grand prize, or I guess maximum prize value, significantly. From what I understand, initially it was possible to win up to $25,000 over the course of a show. After this adjustments, I believe it was capped at $5,000. So a significant downturn in the prizes won. And that to me is just nothing but a ploy to save money because they were clearly struggling. And like I say, this is like the last season of the show. So,
it's interesting you should say that. See, I would take away something different from that. To me, if the show's struggling, you would want to give away more money so that more people watched. To me, it says, was the show so easy that they were giving away so much money that they had to make it harder and therefore less money was won?
Interesting. I did not think of it that way, but that's a good point.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, we're totally hypothetically. If you know, please write us.
Absolutely. I would love to have some more insight on that. But sure. The only other thing, that's pretty much it for gameplay, except for, so we talked about this offline earlier, but given that you are timing this show for up to a minute for each one,
right,
someone could get it in 4 seconds, and now you have a minute and 26 seconds of dead time. So what they would do is that first of all, they wasted a lot of time throughout the course of this show.
I can't agree more. I want you to talk about that, Mike, because this to me is like There were the celebrity introductions took a long time. Like everything took forever.
The celebrity introductions specifically is what I took note of, that where they're really dilly dallying. But over throughout the whole show, like if someone gets it quickly, they'll pause to like analyze their drawing. And Bert Convy does a lot of like, oh, you did a very, very good job there. And like fluffing up of the contestants and like I say, talking about their drawings and whatnot. But what they would do that was, I don't want to say egregious, I think it's kind of cool, but just like the most clear way of like, oh God, we got to fill time. At the end of the game, they would pull people out of the audience to play a quick round where they would get the word or phrase or whatever, and they would choose one of the two teams. And if they got the team to guess the word or phrase or whatever, they'd get $100. And one of the ones I saw, they actually did it twice because they did it so fast. It was like, all right, well, we got another minute, let's go. But yeah, it was just like a very clearly, oh, we're out of time. We got to fill it up a little bit because we have a time slot here.
You know, I'd like to think that a lot of game shows have a way of figuring that out. Like with Wheel of Fortune, they just keep doing puzzles until they run out of time.
Right. And that's kind of the thing here is it's not that graceful. And I think it maybe points towards what we'll get to later when we talk about our ratings, that it's just this isn't the right game for a show.
Well, you know, it's interesting because one of the things we did talk offline about, Mike, is the judges did not know necessarily what was accepted and what wasn't. There was always this kind of, and this is common knowledge from the show, that they had a hard time deciding whether something was true or not, you know, or was
sure.
correct or not.
Was acceptable as an answer, yeah.
Right. And so if you get a wishy-washy judging like that, then it's going to just, again, it's adding to this whole kind of weirdness that's going on throughout the episode.
Yeah, and one episode I saw, I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but the fat guy from Head of the Class was the one of the celebrity contestants, and the other team was going, and their clue was From Russia with Love, and the woman guessed To Russia with Love. And this dude spends the rest of the episode pitching a fit that they put the wrong word or said the wrong word, and he's like pulling out the card with the answer and pointing at it like, it says from right here, you can't accept to, blah, 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 blah. And it's just like, dude, like, stop being a little baby and just play the game. You're a celebrity being paid to be on a game show. Suck it up.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that, but at the same time, you really need to be like well defined in your judging, and from what I understand, that's not the only time they had issues with that.
I'm sure it's not. They were very loosey goosey. But that's, to me, I would rather have it be loosey goosey. There's a thing that a right. friend of mine instilled in me once that has always stuck with me is, just because a game is harder doesn't mean it's better. And by saying you have to say From Russia with Love instead of To Russia with Love, that to me is making it harder simply for the purpose of making it harder. Like, clearly they know what it is, and that to me, like, it's the spirit, not the letter, right? That to me, in this type of game.
Yeah. Anyway. Okay. So there's your gameplay for the show Win, Lose, or Draw. Not a lot of gameplay, but a cool game, especially if you're playing it. When we get back, we'll talk about the history. We'll talk about some of the people who did play it. And we'll also talk about why you need to play it in order for it to be a good game show.
Agreed.
You've been listening to America's favorite game show podcast, Tell Them What They've Won. Welcome back. It's episode number 19, segment number 3. Wow, Mike, we are at 19 again.
19.
Woo. Man.
Where does the time go?
Well, apparently during quarantine, time flies, right?
Or stands still. It's hard to tell, really.
Oh, yeah. Well, anyway, we are doing Win, Lose, or Draw. We're at the history segment. Please enlighten us.
Sure. First, we have a little bit of prehistory. This actually started out as a parlor game at Burt Reynolds' house. He would have celebrity friends over, and they would play this in his living room. To hear him tell it, you can find this episode on YouTube. He heard how much Merv Griffin made on game shows, so he figured, why not? which, you know, is in one sense, it's like, yeah, sure, if you got a good, fun game and you think you can make a buck off it, go for it. But I also think it's a little bit of a cash grab, and I think that translates to the show a little bit.
Well, you know, it's interesting because it was done with him and Bert Convy were the two guys that put together their agency or whatever you want to call it, production company.
Bert and Bert.
Yeah, yep. Bert and Bert, to start this thing. And if it was all just a big, like, ploy to make money, God bless them. They did it.
I mean, it worked. I'm not saying it didn't. You know, good on Burt Reynolds for being like, hey, I got this fun game that I play with my friends. Let's turn it into a 3-season TV show.
Well, and they literally took it directly from the living room with the set.
They sure did. The set is modeled after Burt's living room. I believe Christian touched on that in the news. But, yeah, he confirmed that. I saw from the horse's mouth that is Burt Reynolds' living room.
Well, it was. He's no longer with us. God rest his soul.
Oh, right. Forgot about that. Anyways.
Maybe his living room is still the same. I don't know.
That would be weird. Some other family living in his house just has their, like, shrine to Bert in the living room.
Yeah, we just wanted to keep the whole couch thing here. Yeah. Uh-huh.
And you can only go in there to play win, lose, or draw.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, which one of his living rooms was it?
So anyways, November 2nd, 1986 is when the initial pilot was made. Of course, like you say, Bert Convy was there as the host. Bert and Bert started the whole thing. The initial celebrity guests were Lonnie Anderson, Betty White, Bert Reynolds himself, and Tony Danza, all of which were recurring players on the show with some regularity. And initially, Rod Roddy was the announcer, which when I first read that, I was like, it's great. And it's a bummer that he didn't stick around. But then you watch a bunch of episodes and I don't know that the announcer does anything other than do the, it's the fun game where you draw stuff, win, lose, or draw at the beginning. And like, that's it. So there's not a big presence there for the announcer. So it's okay that Rod Roddy didn't stick around.
Interesting bit of trivia on the first one here, Mike. Burt Reynolds and Tony Danza, this is not the first pilot that they both appeared together on. Do you know what was? It was in 1985?
85? I mean, I don't...
Come on, they're both celebrities.
Right. Oh, Hollywood Squares.
Yes, absolutely. Hollywood Squares is what they both debuted on for the pilot of that show in 85.
Very cool. So that pilot ended up being successful enough. It actually did air. Most pilots, I don't know if most pilots don't air, but sometimes pilots don't even air whether they get picked up or not. It's just seen by a select audience. But this one did air, and it was successful enough that they decided to pick it up. And so September 7th, 1987, both versions, the daytime version hosted by Vicki Lawrence and then the syndicated version hosted by Bert Convy, they both premiered on the same day.
Yeah, but that's also something that doesn't happen very often. That's interesting.
Yeah, I read that, and I had that same thought. I didn't write it down because I, like, wasn't sure that was uncommon, but it felt uncommon that it just both right off the bat like that.
Well, Mike, if you're doing a cash grab.
Hey, yeah, you know what? You got to go in hard at the start, right?
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
Yeah. So for the Vicki Lawrence version, she actually hosted all but one episode of her run. Sally Struthers filled in for a single episode. But other than that, she hosted every single one, which brought to mind that I don't feel like there are a lot of women game show hosts. And as I started looking into it, not only is that true, but it's, like, especially true for this time. Like, she's almost kind of groundbreaking. Like, she's not the first female game show host. I can almost guarantee you that's not true. But all the ones that I could think of, we got I can't remember her name, but the woman from Weakest Link, Ellen's Game of Games, Meredith from the later version of Millionaire. That's kind of all I got.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of, I would say there's probably at least 7 or 8 really well-known ones that we're not thinking about. I mean, even Betty White did host for a period of time.
Sure.
So, I mean, like, it's not a tiny list, but you're absolutely right. In comparison, it's infinitesimal to how many men have hosted game shows.
Right, exactly. We're kind of, like, finding the exception that proves the rule as opposed to disproving the rule.
Right, and I will tell you that Vicki Lawrence was funny as hell.
She was. Okay, so when we started talking about this and I just read it, I was thinking Victoria Jackson the whole time when I'm just, like, researching this. I'm thinking Victoria Jackson.
Okay.
And then I watch it, and I'm like, God, that's not what I remember her looking like. And then I put it all together, I know who Vicki Lawrence is, like, from Mama's Family. And the main reason why I know her, actually, is because she's on this show now called, I think it's called The Cool Kids. It's like a
okay.
sitcom that takes place in a retirement home, and it's her and Martin Mull and
nice.
Can't remember the names of the other folks that are on it, but yeah, just kind of like sort of older comedians and actors. It's not that bad. It's actually created by Charlie Day from Always Sunny in Philadelphia, but it is nowhere near the caliber of Always Sunny in Philadelphia. So keep that in mind.
Right.
Anyways, the main problem with her version of the show was that it was up against The Price is Right. How are you going to beat out The Price is Right, especially in the mid to late 80s when like that's when it was at its peak, I would say.
Why would you even put anything up against it?
Ugh. I mean, well, they replaced Scrabble. Scrabble was there initially, and I think we talked about that in the Scrabble episode that this show ended up replacing it.
Right.
But yeah, it only ran for two seasons. September 1st, 1989 saw Vicky's last version of it. But the Burt Convy version, the syndicated edition, is still going fairly well. At that point, after they canceled the daytime version, Rob Weller took over to host the syndicated version. And I got to tell you, I don't remember him at all. He also used to host, what was it, Entertainment Tonight before John Tesh came in. Yeah. And I remember seeing Entertainment Tonight back then, but I don't remember him at all.
I don't remember him either. I have a little bit of a quick crossover trivia for this.
Oh, yeah?
You know how they did the celebrity caricatures in the beginning of the show? They would always end on Burt Convy, or when Weller was doing it, on Weller,
uh-huh.
with a different one of him every single week. And actually, one week, they actually had a picture of him, a caricature of him, getting covered in slime from, who was it?
Oh, it's got to be Mark Summers, right?
Yes, from Double
Nice.
Dare. Absolutely. So
nice.
Nice little crossover there.
Yeah, our second Double Dare time. In this episode, I love it.
I love it too.
As many times as we can bring up Double Dare, I'm going
to
be happy.
Double Dare and Weird Al seem to be like, and Bill Cullen seemed to be like the.
Oh yes, the dean of game show hosts.
Yes, I'm sorry. We will never refer to Bill Cullen again without saying the dean of game show hosts, Bill Cullen.
Correct. You got to say his full title.
Exactly. But they seem to be the reoccurring theme through all of our shows.
Yeah, right? There's definitely some strong through lines in the game show world.
Sure. All right, go ahead.
But unfortunately for Rob Weller, and by the way, if Rob Weller is listening to the podcast, I apologize for not remembering you. I don't
Ditto.
Mean to slight you as a performer. I just, I was young. What kind of... I was too young for it. I'm never going to stop bringing that up. unfortunately for Rob Weller, he only got to host for one season. The show ended up getting canceled in May of 1990. Ran for a little bit on USA and Game Show Network in reruns, which is, I would think, probably where I saw it a lot. Like we've said, USA, I think, is probably where a lot of my game show memories come from. In 89, I don't want to say rebooted it. Disney Channel made kind of a new version called Teen Win, Lose, or Draw. And this was actually hosted by Mark Price, as we talked about in the news, who played Skippy on Family Ties, one of my favorite shows of all times.
We talked about Ken Jennings in the news being the next possible host of Jeopardy, and Christian said that doesn't happen very often,
right,
that a contestant goes on to become a host. Mark Price actually played on one of the earlier versions of Win, Lose, or Draw, and then became the host
of
this one. So there's another little tie-in there.
But he was there as a celebrity, not a contestant, correct?
Correct. But, okay. I mean, technically...
No. I'm still on board with that. I just wanted to make sure that wasn't, like, before he was Skippy.
Oh, no. Yeah, he was definitely Skippy. Yeah, and he was on as a celebrity there.
Gotcha. This Teen Win, Lose, or Draw was basically the same game. They had a few slight changes and prizes and whatnot. The biggest change, though, was that the teams were now comprised of two contestants and one celebrity instead of two celebrities. But other than that, it was basically the same thing. There were two different runs of it, which I thought was interesting, but basically 89 to 90 was the first season, and then it, for some reason, it's distinctly split out as a second season from 90 to 92, but I think it's more or less kind of the same thing. And then in 2014, they got a revival again on Disney Channel. This time it was just Disney's Win, Lose, or Draw. It was still sort of the teen format, hosted by Justin Willman, which I don't really know anything about. I looked him up. He's a magician of some sort. I am not surprised that I don't know teenage celebrities in the year 2014. I'm a little old for that, but I suspect that also did not go over terribly well because it only lasted the one season and then it got canceled. And the a couple of home versions, Milton Bradley introduced one in 87. Of course, the game Pictionary is a home version of this. Don't forget that. But we also, in a previous episode, talked about the Nintendo game version of this that Christian said was like using I can't remember his exact wording.
But an Etch-a-Sketch with one knob or something.
Yeah, something like that, which is true. We just played a little bit of it this morning, and... it's not great. After I got used to it, you got to admit, my traffic cone was pretty good once you figured out what it was.
Oh, yeah. No. I was like, well, you're doing a pretty good job. And I don't know if you were like up, lefting, upright, you know, upright, 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 upright to go up at an angle. I don't know how you were drawing like that.
Basically like that. Yeah.
But I wonder if a like Nintendo Max controller or a Nintendo Advantage controller.
Yeah, with the little
NES Advantage.
Yeah, absolutely.
May be a little bit easier to draw with than with a regular pad. I don't know.
Well, the question there though is, are those truly a analog input, or is it just tactically different? Like, is it still operating the same way as a standard NES controller? Meaning that there's not different degrees between north and northeast, you know?
Yeah, you've got north, northeast, east. Like, there's eight directions the Max pad.
Yeah, you're not getting north, northwest, that sort of stuff.
Right.
Yeah, that's basically the end of win, lose, or draw. And to be frank, I'm not that surprised. It's not a great. It's not something you want to watch. It's something you want to play. You can't play this at home, really. I mean, I guess you could look away when the answer comes up, but I don't know.
But I feel like, I honestly feel like drawing is half of this game. It may be even more of this game. I mean, I'm not saying, even people who don't like to draw, that like to guess, it's like, it's still, I like to have the draw part. Like, Jenny does not like to draw at all. When we're playing Cranium, she does not want to draw. She does not mind guessing, but she hates drawing. So I could see how Pictionary, you know, win, lose, or draw, whatever, may not be a game that she loves.
Sure.
To me, I enjoy the drawing as much as the guessing.
Well, I agree. And the thing is, so many people are like, oh, I'm not good at drawing. It's like, that's the point. 90% of people are not good at drawing because we don't do it all the time. If you play that game with an artist, they're going to take all 60 seconds trying to get it all perfect and looking exactly right. The point is that it's crappy drawings and you're doing the bare minimum to get somebody to say something. That's the whole fun of it. And I totally agree that without being able to go up there and try your skills at drawing, there's not a lot of fun to be had here, I gotta say.
Right. So it doesn't translate well to television. And that's where my rating will come down to. I guess we're gonna rate by markers.
Yeah, all right, markers.
Drawings?
Caricatures?
I mean, I don't know. What do you think?
Caricatures.
Yeah. I like it. Let's use caricatures.
All right.
So out of five characters, I'm gonna go first here, Mike.
Sure.
I'm giving this it's gonna be a pretty low mark. It's gonna be a 1.75. Yeah. And here's the reason why. 2 is really close to 2.5, and 2.5 is like midway.
That's true.
As much as I want to give it a 2, I can't. I got to give it a 1.75. Here's the thing. I did like this as a child. I remember watching the show and really enjoying it, but I don't like it anymore. And I agree with you that it doesn't translate well to the game show from being in Burt Reynolds' living room. I never thought of it as a cash grab until you said it, and that makes me like it even a little bit less. And then on top of all that, I just don't feel like there was a lot to the set in terms of like the audience is typically, I mean, the contestants are typically facing away from the audience looking at the board.
That's true.
Like, it just didn't come off as all that great. The intro where Bert has to come through is the worst intro in game show history. It's probably not the worst in game show history. I'm just saying that, but it's bad.
It's
and
super
I don't
awkward.
Like it. So 1.75 for me, the lowest rating I've given this far to date.
Wow. And I don't disagree with you, but I don't want to do as harsh. I'm going to go with 2 caricatures out of 5 because I do think the game is fun. And I do think the contestants probably have a blast. The contestants get to hang out with celebrities and meet them, even if they're not the greatest celebrities in the world. You know, it's still fun. cool to meet people who are on TV shows. And again, if you're playing this, I think it's awesome. And I don't think, I agree 100% that it does not translate to a game show and it's not fun to watch if you're not playing. But to me, I don't think that's as big of a hit to the funness of what the game could be. So I, but still a big hit, just not as big a hit. So I'm saying two. I'm going to give it that extra 0.25 that you took away and give it an even two.
All right. And that's all the time we have for today.
Special thank you to Christian, folks at BuzzerBlog, everyone who listens, everyone who writes us, everyone, literally everyone. Thank you.
Yeah. And remember, I'll throw it out there again. Please let us know what you think of these shows. I'd love to hear your ratings. We give ours. Tell us why you loved it or hated it. We'd love to know.
The fact that we haven't got any of that unsolicited blows my mind, considering how much people listen and write us. The only thing we got was that we were too harsh on Joker's Wild, but nobody else even said what they thought of it. They just thought we were too harsh. So yeah, let us know.
Yeah, I think we got an American Gladiators we were too harsh on.
Oh, yeah, we did. Even though we liked it, but anyways, yeah.
Oh, I know. That's the sad thing. I mean, we really liked it. All right, tune in again next time when we bring you the latest and greatest in the world of game shows, as well as a brand new featured show, too.
And remember, you can always catch us online, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and of course, tellthemwhatthey've won.com.
Please subscribe, share, like, and drop a review if you like what you heard.
And if you did, didn't like it, I hope you're forced to watch 100 episodes of this.
Just the beginning. Just the intro.
100 intros in a row on loop.
I love it. Oh. See you next week, Mike. Oh. You've been listening to America's favorite game show podcast, Tell Them What They've Won, a JTAC audio production, copyright 2020. No part of this podcast may be reproduced by anyone without the express written consent of the creators. For more information or to contact us, please go to tellthemwhatthey'vewon.com. So what did you learn this week, Mike?
I think I learned that not all fun games make a fun game show.
Yeah, I think I agree. That's what I learned this week. As much as I like the show part of game shows, that there's still some things that just don't translate well. They just don't move over. I mean, maybe they do for the American public, but just not for me.
Yeah, I think the ratings are on your side on this one.
Copyright 2020, a JTAC audio production.